you are one of us. Your passion is the world of mountain biking, from enduro to gravel races and everything in between. This is Insider MTB, the podcast that takes you behind the handlebars, into the dirt, and behind the scenes of the mountain biking world. And now your host, Austin White.
All right, it's time for a new intro, that's for sure, right? I mean, new year, new me, new you. It's time for a new intro. I think I'm going to have to rebuild that one. You know, maybe if you could step up and be the editor, you know, video guy, maybe we could just switch roles here and we can get that fixed.
I was just starting to like that thing.
Stop it. All right, you guys, I'm back. We're back.
We're back. Come on.
Well, because you missed the last one in episode 17. So.
Yeah, we're back.
But this is episode 18, and Spencer's back after your hiatus of racing motocross, and now you're even back to riding bikes. I mean, who are you now?
New year, old Spencer. You know the program.
Just diving into pools on jet skis, you know.
Yep.
Motocross. You bought yourself a new dirt bike. You trained real hard. You raced. What did you finish up with all that work for the day in the dirt? Yeah, what did we get?
I went 4-4. Both days. And I got like 7th and 8th in the two team races or something like that.
What was the 4-4? What class was that?
Freaking nervous novice class, bro.
Yeah. 25 plus novice? What?
No, just straight up novice.
Just straight novice? 4th? How were those starts? I had to be packed on that.
Yeah, it was packed. But Mark Tilly's kid, if you know who Mark Tilly is, he's the editor of Dirt Bike Mag, and he's ex-pro racer. His kid won both days, and he's pretty fast. And, Yeah. It was fun. I could barely hang on. I got arm pumped pretty bad, but
was it rough?
Yeah, it's Glen Helen. Glen Helen, dude, a day in the dirt. The back section's brutal. But
gnarly.
It was gnarly. Fun, man. We had a great time.
Dude, and there was a bunch of dudes there, right? They're like mountain bikers and cyclists, I feel like, usually do day in the dirt.
A lot of the boys, honestly. Luca Cometti was out there, Warren Nis, Bubba Warren. I mean, yeah, a bunch of mountain bike guys go out there and ride. And Zink's been out there. Kyle Strait's been out there. Damon's been out there. Zink rides moto without gloves. Gnarly.
Ow.
Yeah, he says since he doesn't ride mountain bikes with gloves, why would he ride dirt bikes? And I'm like, dude, there ain't no roof.
Dude, no way. Does he have hand guards?
Nope.
No hand guards.
No, you're gloveless. Gnarly.
Wow. And it's kind of cold at that time for a day. That's gnarly.
Yeah, but we've been blessed with a freaking...
Dude, the weather's
winter.
Crazy, right?
Yeah, we need some rain, man. I've been doing the rain dance lately, but
has that
working.
Messing up the trail building for you?
Yeah, I can't do anything. But whatever.
All right. Well, let's get into...
Welcome back. Happy New Year.
It is. I took a little time off. I mean, holidays were kind of tough getting people lined up and families and things like that. And I just figured like, hey, let's just wait. New Year. New Year brings a lot of new stuff for us. We kind of hinted at it last time we talked, and on the other podcast with Alexi. So yeah, I mean, we got a bunch of new things, one being that we do have a sponsor of the show now. You know, we're getting super rich over here. I don't know when I'll be signing up autographs like Spencer at Sea Otter, but our new sponsor is Maxima. And you know Maxima? Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Come on, moto guy. Maxima kills it in the moto world, and they also do cycling stuff. So they're on board this year. And yeah, I mean, we're going to be giving away a bunch of shit. You know, maybe even get you a sponsorship, you know?
Let's go. Maxima Racing Oils, welcome to Insider MTB.
Yeah. But we do have a special episode coming up probably next week with them live and a bunch of their athletes down there near the headquarters. Do it something kind of cool. So
sick. Well, let me know in advance, please, so I can plan on this. So I can plan on being there.
Yeah, Spencer, you want to drive down to San Diego with me or what?
I'm down. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And then maybe we'll stay, do San Diego Supercross or what?
That's already the plan. I'm
gonna
be.
Oh,
down,
you're already going. Oh yeah. Shit. Okay. Sorry. I guess I should call you more often.
Yeah. Exactly.
If people don't know, I mean, Spencer, we go through these stages of like we talk every day, or we just don't talk at all, or we'll just do a bunch of filming and then just be like, okay, it was good talking to you, and then hey, you want to do a podcast?
we've been busy, so it's all right.
It is. It's true. How's the Universal thing jumping in the water?
Good, man. It's been fun. I'm the part-time guy officially there now, so I've been working there a lot. But as of today, they're pulling the plug on the water, draining the pool for 6 weeks, starting today, which is Monday, January 6th. So I got nothing going on but riding my bike and
what?
Shooting some stuff for the next 6 weeks. Let's go.
So, like, through this time that there's no water, are your web feet that you've grown from, like, the movie and the hands, are you just losing all that? Or what happens for 6 weeks?
Well, today's the first day, so I'll tell you in 6 weeks. But, yeah, I don't know.
We'll check in.
Yep.
Oh, shit. Dude, that means hey, we got some filming on some ridgelines, then I guess we got to get to.
That's right. Some drives to San Diego to meet the new sponsor. And
so you got free time. Shit.
Figure it out, man.
Load it up.
Don't
know. Maybe
they'll
have a novice class at Supercross San Diego. You sign
it up. Might as well. Mitch Ropo, I saw the race in Arena Cross. I wonder how that went.
Oh, man. We're going to get into that, huh?
Yeah, we got to.
He brought up to me that he was going to go get his Supercross license at one moment. So
that's what I heard.
I think that's a pretty ambitious thing, but I mean, I haven't seen any mountain biker cyclist get it. We definitely had talks about it. It's a little tough because that's the industry I come from. I know you're around that industry, and kind of like I spent my whole life chasing to be a professional in that, and got my pro license, raced it, and I can tell you it is a lot fucking harder than it looks, I guess, you know? So, I mean, I guess it's tough for me to see someone that is already a professional in another sport gets paid good in that. And honestly, to risk your life to go get a pro license in that and race super. It's like, why, dude? Like, not to be mean, but like, dude, there's other races, Mammoth. You could go do Loretta's and have just as much fun doing that type of stuff than trying to get out there on a supercross track and race and break your neck or something. I'm not saying he will, but dude, it's not for the faint of heart, I guess, you know?
Yeah, it's gnarly. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, kudos to him for trying. He's a talented guy, and he's got a lot of talent in that bloodstream of his. And
he does.
Who knows if he can figure it out? Great, but yeah. Not exactly.
It's just
it's tough.
It's tough. It's not gonna be handed. And I kind of asked the question more why than like not being negative on it. But like I that's a lot. Like if you already done so much to get to such a high level in another sport, like. It's like the Michael Jordan going to baseball thing, right? You know?
Yeah, I think that's why, though. Maybe it's a challenge. It's something new for him, and everyone's telling him he can't do it, so he's going to try to prove everyone wrong, I think. Yeah.
On a Stark.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen until
Stark's going to be a little bit.
Which, speaking of that, I mean, we could talk about Moto.
I mean, this is the Moto podcast now.
Insider Motocross.
I did have Insider Motocross for a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing on the docket, we are doing live streams here, and not live streams podcasts, live streams of event coverage. Some of you may know, which not everyone knows, that this is I have a production company, and in that production company, we do commercials, and then we also do broadcast, and the broadcast is broadcasting events, and mainly I'm hired by, you know, like NBC would be an example or flow to go and broadcast. So I'm that, but I see a lot of growth in cycling. I know it's kind of in a low spot, right? Which is kind of weird, but I see the growth of, I feel like the US deserves some great coverage of live streaming of races. And I'm going to land that over here on the Insider channel. First up, US Cup at Vail Bike Park, basically what, like Temecula Marietta area, I guess is the best way to say that. You've ridden there, I'm sure, right? We've ridden there
absolutely.
Together.
Yeah, we shot a video.
Yeah. But they have the US Cup there, and that everyone comes there to get their points. Blevins,
XC race there.
Yes, yep. Big XC race. And we're going to be there. It's going to be free on our YouTube channel. And I think Spencer, if I can talk him into it, is going to come down and do a little announcing during the racing.
Commentating. Jeez.
Yeah, commentating. Where are you going to play?
Get the radio voice on.
Oh, man. I cannot wait for that. But, I mean, hold on. Didn't you race it last year?
I raced the non-UCI pro class, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll have you race it this year. We'll just mic you up. I was going to click this right next to the thing. Sorry.
I got some training to do if we're going to do that. I did just ride on New Year's Day 100 miles with 10K of climbing, but yeah. I don't know that I'm XC fit right now, but I guess I got 2 months 2 and a half, 2 months for that. Maybe.
Sounds
yeah.
Like we should film it.
And I got 6 weeks to just crank out some training. So let's go. Maybe. Yeah. Screw it. Why not? Yeah.
Don't call it a comeback, right?
No, we're not gonna go that far.
Hey, well, your teammate from Specialized will be there, Chris Blevins. So
yep.
We'll have a special podcast with him from that race, after that race, around that race, sometime during that race. But yeah.
What else? What else are you looking at streaming?
We are looking. So last year we did Sea Otter, but not the racing, obviously, just the podcast and the long one. And right now I'm working on, because I already got the RV spot figured out, top of the hill. You can watch me try to park the rig again. And
that wasn't that bad.
And we'll do a podcast from there again. It's more just trying to figure out if we're doing it at the motorhome or if we're doing it down in the pits and things like that. So we're in negotiations with different people, different industry people. Let's go with that. To figuring out of if it's down in a booth and we're having some cool stuff. But definitely already lined up some pretty cool guests for that. You're going to hop on that a few times, which either you're racing or not racing or what. I don't know. What is, do you even have plans for Sea Otter at this moment? Or,
I mean, I'm definitely going. I'm going with Thule again. Similar program. I plan on being there. Definitely going to race Enduro. Probably going to race Slalom. I don't know. Maybe
what?
We. I don't know. That's up for debate. And I don't know. I'm down to put another project together in a fun way and let's do something silly.
Maybe you rode the other extreme, but this year you're just going to race a downhill bike for everything.
No.
Yes.
Not happening there,
dude. Could that you one. Imagine that up the road this on a downhill bike pedaling your ass off?
Nope. It's not going to happen. But maybe, I don't know. Maybe it'd be something. It'd be fun to do something else. Do like.
Unicycle?
A gravel race or something, or do.
Can you
know.
Just sign up into the like the big gravel race,
like the Lifetime race? No.
Yeah, or I guess they kind of some of them race XC bikes on that, right?
Yeah.
Not the.
Yeah. They all do.
They do.
Yeah. I think so.
Can you sign up into that one?
I don't think I can do that.
Okay.
I can do the Fuego or whatever, the long Fuego XL, but I don't think I can do that. Well, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
I can look into it.
But maybe this time we just don't do all the events so you have some energy for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then maybe we just plan, you just get the whole shot and you run it as long as you can. Just that's going to be your claim to fame. Burn the candle right at the beginning. We're just going to...
All right. So sprint then, training is what I got to do.
Yeah.
All right, game on. I don't know if you're listening to this or follow us on Instagram or whatever. Tell me what I should do at Sea Otter. I want to hear what people think and... We'll try to give the people what they want. I'm game for that.
I'm in for that. Yeah. I'm kind of into watching and film it. So
let's
yeah.
Go.
So we have a podcast live stream from that, which hopefully it'll be maybe multiple days or something like that. I'm putting it all together. I'm trying to figure it out what people want. So yeah, if you have DMs, toss me that. I did promote the voicemail thing and no one has called. So
yeah, I don't
yeah,
think.
You know, Spencer was against
we
it. We tried the voicemail thing, but I mean,
shoot or shoot.
I thought people might want to come in and talk shit. So, no one did. But I did talk to Jamesy a lot lately, and I keep trying to send him his mic back so he can be on the podcast because currently Jamesy doesn't have his mic because we took it at Sea Otter.
Oh, didn't even know that.
And Jamesy will be making his comeback though at Sea Otter on the mic.
Really?
Yeah, because he says the company that he works at now knows the type of person he is. You know, so he's
really so he's confident.
He's confident now that he can come on and be Jamesy. So,
all right.
I do have a drinking buddy now again for the podcast at moments, since Spencer's just my health guy over here. You know.
Yeah, I'm far from that, but that's great. I'm excited for that. I'm cool. Stoked for him to get back on and stoked for what the future holds. We're going to make this a normal thing again, and people yep. have been asking me what I've been doing and why we haven't been recording podcasts, and I apologize for missing one of them, but people that I've seen out in the wild and people on Instagram have been asking me about it, so here we are.
The
new
plan-
year.
I mean, if you're into it, but I'm planning to do 2 a month. If
yeah, that sounds great. Just get on a consistent basis.
Probably text you like 30 minutes before and be like, hey, can you join? But yeah. We planned this one out. We had a good little timing into this one, so you should be good, you know?
I'm cool. Cool. And honestly, the last one that you did, you did plan. I just ran into some issues, so couldn't make it happen.
Dude, I know you were deep training for that fourth place at freaking
Day
in the Dirt.
It had nothing to do with training, but yeah.
Totally did, dude. Totally did. No, got yourself a brand new 2025 CRF 250, and now your factory. Your factory.
Ah.
It's over.
I wouldn't say factory, but
Joe Shimoto's your freaking teammate and Hymus, and you're racing A1. It's over.
Watch out. Watch out,
but,
boys.
Yeah, we do have a guest for you guys. I think we've done a bunch of the housekeeping to catch up on everything. If there is anything that you guys, we did get a request for some people to interview, and I don't know the person personally on the interview. I need to pull that up. I can pull that up, and then maybe we dive into that. Maybe I need your help on that one, Spencer. But if you do have some interesting things that you would like for us to talk about, interview, any of that, roll into the DMs. Drop us some messages. Let us know. Right, Spencer?
Absolutely.
Absolutely? All right.
We'll make it happen.
Right, let me try to find this. I feel like I had it a second ago, and then, but I think it was like one of the legends of gravel, like one of the first persons doing gravel. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Maybe Neil Shirley.
Maybe that's what it was.
Neil Shirley was my old coach. He, I would say, is one of the pioneers of gravel racing in the U.S. Professional road cyclist at the time, and he did a lot with Road Bike Action magazine and really, really pushed gravel. I think he was the first winner of Dirty Kanza, or now called.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, maybe not first, but
one of the first guys to dominate at it.
Maybe I could be wrong. I don't know. Anyways, he's done a lot of gravel racing, a lot of really cool gravel projects. He could be one. He works for Envy. He's a marketing manager or director at Envy now.
Seymour.
Kimo Seymour. That name sounds really familiar. But
no, it sounds familiar. But yeah, we need to get him on the pod, I guess. Yeah. It was a request. But we'll circle back around to that. We do have our guest here, Liam. I'm going to add him. Hopefully, there we go.
Liam Woods, everybody.
Liam Woods. He's not even in his seat
there
right now.
There he is.
Yeah,
he's
look at that. Just
looking.
No one there. Oh, there he is. There he is. Liam's alive. What's up,
you
Liam?
Took a while, so I really got a drink.
Yeah. What'd you get?
What's up? How are you?
What are you sipping on?
Yeah, what are you sipping on? Alcoholic
beverage.
There you go.
Yeah, it's French, right? Just French.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a French beer.
So, Liam Woods here we got. Works for
Worldwide Cyclery.
Worldwide Cyclery, running the show over there, doing a lot of the marketing stuff behind the, would you guys say you're the one of the biggest online retailers in the U.S. that also is like really driving all of your marketing through a lot of mixed media?
Yeah, exactly. We're one of the larger online retailers, as well as, I don't know, one of the early players to also like start driving some media to help sales. So like kind of combining the media along with the retail side of things. Kind of pre-COVID times, there wasn't many players doing that, so.
Yeah, so hold on. You're no stranger to doing podcasts. You guys have your own.
You guys do have your own podcast. So.
We do a podcast, the Mountain Bike Podcast. So,
that's right.
Not on many others though. So that's a little different.
Yeah. Well, this is the non-PG. This is a rated R one. So we're just gonna let it loose right now. Where is Worldwide ranked? Like, because on the list with top retailers online, where would we put it?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to see because some of them, like Backcountry Competitive, are like blurred because Backcountry's not really only bike, right? They've got like a bunch of other outlets and stuff. But I'd say we're like 3-ish in the U.S. and I want to say like 5 or 6 in the world.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah,
it's pretty solid. Who would you say, other than competitive cyclists, what are
Jensen's
your... Jensen?
Up there, yeah, in the U.S.
Yep.
And then I think... Forget the European ones. What was the UK one, that Chain Reaction, when they shut down that?
Yeah, but they went down, right?
Yeah, a lot of, you know, US and UK kind of retailers got a lot of their market share. And then, yeah, I want to say like Bike Components Direct.
How much market share did they have before they went down?
Well, they're dwindling. Yeah, they're dwindling. They were one of the top players because, then they're kind of caught in the middle of that Brexit stuff, which I don't know all the details on that.
Oh, that's what wrecked them, basically?
It definitely didn't help them. I don't know if that was, you know, what wrecked them, but it hurt a lot of UK brands and distributors. So,
really?
Yeah.
Just taken because they had the way that their money was put in different escrows and then it screwed them, or?
Yeah, and import-export laws, I believe, that goes along with all that stuff. Again, I'm not like an expert with all that. I don't know details, but.
And the British pound, I think, just kind of took a big hit from, their disassociation with
Europe. Recently, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another big thing is U.S. dollar and the euro has stayed pretty even over the past 5-6 years. And, you know, surrounding markets affect that and where we ship to and everything. Well, actually, we're not allowed to ship out of the U.S. a lot anyways, depending on the brand. But
it is kind of unique. Like, I noticed how the rules are with each of you guys as the distributors or whatever. How it comes down to is even like how you guys can't sell mini bikes online and to parts, to different things like that. Like, it seems kind of weird the world that we live in now that you just like buying a bike online should be a lot simpler, you would think, right? Like, you guys should be able to just sell whoever online, right? Like, talk a little bit about some of that stuff. Oh, Spencer's like,
I know a lot about this.
Oh, really?
From my dad. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, with that side of things. Yeah, I mean, it all depends on what agreements you have with what distributor in what country, right? And if they're a part of the brand, a subsidiary, or a third-party distributor, and who's kind of moving the product. So, like, let's just say big ones, SRAM RockShox, we're not allowed to ship that outside the U.S. at all. So that's based on their other distributors they have in other countries and agreements they have. So, you know, so with that brand, I want to say Fox Suspension is the same way. We can only ship that within the U.S. We can't even ship it to Canada because they have their own distribution people and rules in Canada. So,
well, now that Trudeau's stepping down, I think you guys are good. Just punch it out, you know, get it on up there into Canada.
There's still some people in the way. If they lose the prime minister, because a lot of it has to do with the importer and whoever that is. And if there's certain families or brands, whatever, that are owning import rights into countries like the Czech Republic or something, let's say one company is the one that's importing all of Czech Republic. And I'm just pulling that out for an example. But if Worldwide starts selling to Czech Republic at the U.S. price, which could be much lower because of lack of import and export duties, and from a U.S. company to a U.S. company now selling into the Czech Republic, it just kind of destroys the margin that the Czech Republic importer could make. And it would really piss them off. So they have all sorts of MAP policies and different ways to protect the distributor and importer. And just from my dad being the Garnet importer for motocross boots and cycling shoes and stuff like that for 30 years, I've heard a lot of
don't some people get around that by doing like the eBay store? So it's
it depends on policies. Yeah. but it would never make anyone happy if a UK brand is getting around that and sending boots to the US that are cheaper than what we're selling in the US.
And then
that doesn't do good for the brand. It doesn't look good for the brand.
Even if you get into that, say someone's doing that, and I'm like, well, I don't want to sell X brand anymore. And then I'm going to start offloading it at a discount, which then eventually hurts the integrity and the quality of the brand or the impression of the brand that the market might have. So, you know, even though you might be making a dollar today, that brand's not going to be making a dollar in the future because, you know, X distributor wasn't happy and decided to offload product. So there's a lot of that kind of weird stuff on the online space. I'd say bikes actually kind of laxed. Like, there used to be a lot more rules about selling bikes online before COVID. And then when COVID happened, it was kind of free for all, right? Do whatever you can, sell whatever you can. And then once kind of stuff kind of got back to normal, and then started Flip. Now it's like, okay, everyone can sell online, but now we have like different online rules. Whether that's, you know, you have to buy X amount a year to make the online dealer level, or, you know, they kind of, some brands handle that pretty well. Like Park Tool, for instance, the bicycle tool brand, they're one of the first to go, okay, we're going to allow, like, I want to say it's like 3 or 5 brands to sell on eBay and Amazon. And these are 3 to 5 brands that we select. And we know you guys will enforce MAP. You guys, you know, don't pull anything shady. And then we can control these 5 brands. Where if it's a free-for-all and there's 100 brands, then yeah, everyone's okay. Kind of like...
competing for the same space.
I think yeah. Shimano had that problem for a little bit, right?
They still do. Shimano's a...
They still do.
Cool story, okay. Yeah.
All right. Well...
Yeah. But yeah. Shimano USA is a subsidiary of Japan, so they don't get a lot of leeway to make rules. It all comes from Japan, so...
Makes sense. Yeah, because I've always heard that you could just backdoor stuff pretty much on eBay for Shimano stuff.
That's the case. They are getting better. I'm not going to say they're the worst, or definitely how they used to be. They're getting better, but yeah, again, it's when the rules come from a different country, it's hard to make everyone happy.
So, I mean, I'm sure everyone's kind of seen the news, but the GT and Rocky Mountain thing, and just the way the industry is kind of where... I don't even know. It's like, it's almost like we were kind of getting out of this hole and like maybe we're back in a little bit of a hole right now. I don't know. What is that feeling for like you guys over there?
What do you guys think? Certain brands are very much still in that hole and just feeling the effects of the COVID boom, the COVID bust, and then kind of where everything's leveling out. Brands like GT or anything under like a big umbrella, like Pond, who owns GT, they own Cannondale, they own Santa Cruz, 1UP Components, so on, right? Those brands are ran differently, right? They're ran like a big brand, you know, like a, I'm trying to think of like a huge brand, like a Ford Motors, right? Where they're looking at revenue and numbers, and like if something's not performing, they're just going to start pulling budget and funding to that. And I think GT's fallen victim to some of that stuff. Where, you know,
I mean, Rocky, it has to be the death of GT, right? Right now, if we're not developing new bikes, why do you put that statement out? Just be like, hey, we're done. I mean,
that was, it's been a battle for them as a whole, and they've struggled to try to find an identity back for GT. And I think that, yeah, it got to a point where it just doesn't makes sense. And I mean, I don't know, I could see it selling and going somewhere else, and somebody else brings it back as a boutique-ish brand or something, or some other
worldwide or what. You guys swoop up some brands here and there, you know, we're just gonna see the worldwide bike now or what?
We looked at bike brands, and it's such a hard thing to deal with. Like, it's such, you need so much capital to get started, and you have to hold on to inventory and so much stuff. And product cycles are 3 to 5 years, right? So,
which that was going to be one of my questions was, oh, well, not even just questions, just willing or wanting to talk about. You guys kind of took a chain reaction slight approach where you guys have a few brands of your own where you're pushing other people's brands for distribution rights, but you're also pushing your own brands. You have two, two that I know of, an apparel brand and then a hard parts component brand. With a lot of new stuff and not a lot of new stuff coming and a lot of new things that help you guys kind of
have some
fun.
Let me get my notebook out here so I can start my online retailer real quick.
yeah, but seriously, I don't know. Talk about that maybe a little bit and where that's going. You got Trail One and what's the other one I'm drawing a blank
Kettle,
on?
Kettle Apparel.
Kettle, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is
not wearing anything. Oh, this hat.
Clothing stuff.
Kettle Apparel. So I think we acquired Kettle from QBP, which is a
it was a brand before
Kettle was a brand before it. And it was from QBP who created it, and it had really good bones. Like, yeah, you know, they did a great job kind of making this kind of casual like tech casual apparel, almost like athleisure but like more mountain bike focused apparel, and we acquired them, I want to say, in 2019, maybe 2018. And at the time, we were looking, you know, to get a brand, right? Like, to start creating our own stuff, being in control of some of our own margin, just kind of reading how the retail space was going. And yeah, Kettle Mountain came up, and it seemed like a good opportunity. And a lot of us do so much stuff outside the bike industry, right? Like, you know, you're hiking, you're running, you're camping, like all this stuff, traveling, right? Like even just the clothes you wear when you go on an international flight kind of makes a big difference. Yeah, if they're comfortable, for sure. Where the pockets are, you have zippers, right? So you can like roll through a crazy international airport or train station, not be worried about getting pickpocketed. Like all these little details that, you know, we've all kind of just started to pick up on. So that's kind of where Kettle started to go. And then COVID happened, and it kind of helped us stay out of the bike boom and bust a little bit, because we have this outside bike brand kind of line.
So people outside of cycling buy a lot of Kettle then, or?
Tons, yeah. Yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah, Mark Hoppus of Blink-182 was wearing Kettle Coachella like 2 years ago. Like,
really?
And then we looked it up, and like he bought pants from a Instagram ad, literally bought through an Instagram ad, purchased, and then like bought a second pair. We had no clue. Like no one in the warehouse like read Mark Hoppus. We're like, oh, that's Mark Hoppus from Blink-182, you know? Like,
wow.
So yeah, it's doing really well in that space. So that's cool. And we've fully vertically owned that brand. And it's been awesome to like help develop some of the bike stuff. And then we have some non-bike stuff. And now I think this next year will be a really cool, like now we're going from like, you know, kind of clothes that do a variety of functions to more like discipline focused clothing. So now I have a little bit more like a specific mountain bike pant, where before all of our pants are kind of like fit two or three different niches. We're going to have like a trail running short that will like help fit a lot of these things. So it's, you know, still in its infant stages, but it's going really well. And it's, again, it's a brand we can kind of have a little bit more fun with, have a little bit more margin and safety with, like, you know, when stuff like this happens in the bike industry, which worldwide still doing great. Like, you know, we're still ticking along. We're just being smarter with inventory purchasing versus, you know, maybe some other brands that have gotten into
maybe
trouble,
like GT, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they're the manufacturers, so they have to hold the inventory, you know, as a retailer, you can kind of pick and choose where you want to hold your inventory.
Yeah. And you guys have full control over everything. You can zig when you want to zig or zag when you want to zag, you know, like you guys are making the products you want. And I think that that's seems to be carrying over into the consumer. You're making products that you guys genuinely like, and it's selling. And that's what's cool. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then best KOMs are when I wear the gear. So,
oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure. It's the only time I beat Spencer. So just saying. it's a real seller for me. That's why I get it, you know?
I'd like to see a head-to-head against you two. You guys should do an IMTB race.
I would win, so it's already decided.
Yeah. Levo, if I have the cheat to Levo win. On turbo versus manpower.
Yes, that's right.
I'd still probably throw some money on Spence. No offense.
That's fucked up. This is my show. Fuck you guys.
and then there's Trail One.
Yeah, there's Trail One, which is Trail One Components. It's a hard component brand that actually worldwide just has an equity share in. So there's two.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's two other owners. Oh. So worldwide has most of the ownership, but there are some other people. We have an engineer that used to work at Raceface. And then BKXC is also involved in it. He was involved pretty heavily at the beginning, and now he's involved mostly with like naming and marketing and storytelling. But cool. So we make bar stem grips, pedals, and a few accessories right now. But I am pretty involved with that side of the brand. Kind of everything. I don't do CAD work and engineering, but I have a lot of inputs in that space. And then all the way up to like, you know, so ordering and website and photos and ad creation to like where the actual digital ads get placed on the internet. I don't know how to do that. This stuff's insanely confusing and like,
and you're just typing in the email, make it light.
Yeah,
it's not light enough.
Yeah, no, like all where all that ad stuff lives on, you know, Google ad platforms and stuff. But yeah, that's really cool, and that's kind of just another like, you know, experiment in a way to see, you know, how could we create a brand with products that we want to ride, we're not changing the way bar stem grips are made. Like, we know that. We're not like innovating something that's never been done. We're just trying to make really good quality components that we think ride well. But a bit with that is we want a philanthropic approach to it. So we give back $1 of every product sold to the trail networks. So I'd have to look, but I want to say we're getting close to like $20,000 within 2 years donated back to trail networks. But you know, it's going in the right direction. You know, like there's other brands that have like $1 million donated, but we're like 2 years into this.
I mean, is the end goal with that? Obviously, I feel like in that area, the moneymaker has to be to get an OEM.
Yes and no. OEM's a weird thing. We had a OEM spec on Revel bikes for a year. And you know, I'd say it actually helps more, at least at our size currently, it helps more with meeting a bunch of factory minimums and getting to like a better price at the factory versus, you know, we're driving all of our money off of this OEM. And if we lose this OEM, we're going to be like, you know,
it's dangerous for sure.
We'll be out. That being said, though, I think it's a great way to get the brand out there to people that might not know the brand. And what I've found just working worldwide for so long is a lot of people replace their bike with OEM parts. They don't know why. They just do it. Like the Maxxis Ardent tire, for instance. That hasn't been my favorite tire ever. But it's been still like a top-selling tire because it came on bikes from 2008 to 2014. And people just replace that bike or that tire on that bike. So, you know,
whether it works well or not, it's what people are sold on.
You know, so many people bring their cars to Ford and say, put the same tires that are on there. And they don't know why, but they're just doing it, you know?
I just call you for the inside tip. I'm like, dude, what do I need? I'm riding gravel this week. What are we getting? You know?
Yeah, spandex and skinny tires.
So one thing we kind of skipped over, and this kind of would build on to what you're talking about and everything. I know this because I've known you for a while, and Austin kind of does too. But what got you going in the cycling world as a whole? What brought you to Worldwide? What brought you into all of this?
Loaded question, but
got you into bikes?
Kind of always rode bikes. Rode BMX as a kid. You know, hoodlum, building dirt jumps. High school days, going to skate parks, stuff like that. And then I grew up in Ventura. So there's a lot of, there's a big scene out there. Some older cats that, you know, were pretty well known and helped build some big dirt jumps and stuff. So that was all fun. And then near end of high school, I ended up hurting both of my wrists and like couldn't really ride BMX for a bit. Rode fixies for a little bit because that was pretty hot at the time. We just bombed the biggest sales I could. Ran into a guy that ran a bike shop in Ventura. His name's Trevor Dunn. And he was like, you guys seem pretty solid on these. You guys want road bikes? And we're like, sure. And this is me and my buddy Anthony. And we'll go to the shop. He had a little race shop. It was just him. He loved racing bikes and XC bikes. Like, had like a master's team. And yeah, he built us basically road bikes out of scrap parts. He's like, ride these for 2 weeks, show up on the group ride. So we did that, showed the group ride. And yeah, we're just like, oh, this is pretty awesome. And like, he's like, yeah, you guys are like, seem pretty good right away. Like, you want to go race a mountain bike race? I was like, sure. So I took borrowed his hard,
Metal Mountain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Metal Mountain Cyclery back in the day. Yeah. Went out to like, I want to say like the first Vail Kenda Cup of that year. This was maybe 2013 or 14, maybe 13. And I showed up on a borrowed bike and he was like, oh, you're going to race Cat 2 because like, you know, you're not going to race Cat 3. And I'm like, oh, I'm not going to like be cocky at my first race and race Cat 2 and get smoked, you know? So I raced Cat 3 and I'm pretty sure I won by like 2 minutes or something. So...
Sandbagger over here.
Yeah, first race ever sandbagging. Yeah. Next race went Cat 2. I don't know if you were racing Cat 2 at that time, Spencer, or Cat 1.
You guys raced each other for a while.
We were always kind of like balancing category because he had been doing it a little bit longer than me. Yeah. So we're the same age.
Oh.
Yeah. Dude, I met Liam originally at my old coach that we were talking about a little bit earlier before Liam came on, Neil Shirley, put on this thing called 4 Days to Fitness every, it was between Christmas and New Year's. It was 4 days, and they were in Santa Clarita, and like, it started off as just his riders, which was like 12 people he'd put on a training camp for and bring brands in, and you'd talk to brands, and kind of like, it was awesome. He'd tell us all about training and recovery and partnerships and all this stuff. And then it grew into like anybody could come, and there was like 100 people. And I'll never forget, like, Neil has always been on me for like being super courteous in the group ride and like super steady and nothing crazy. And this dude, these two dudes, I think you guys were on alloy bikes or something. We were doing one descent, and these two guys that I'd never seen before were just like pinned all over the place, crossing the yellow lines, just hauling ass. And I'm like, damn, these dudes are gnarly. Like, these, they must be like real legit guys or something. And it was Liam and Anthony. And
not legit, and just stupid.
You got, well, dude, Liam is one of the fastest road descenders I've ever ridden with.
Really?
It's oh my God, dude, he's gnarly. Yeah, it's sick. It's awesome. And yeah, so then I don't know, we kind of became friends then and had some other mutual friends, and I don't really know, it was 10 years ago, but
yeah,
did a photo shoot with him for Road Bike Action. I shot photos, and yeah, kind of, we've been friends for a while.
We're just always getting like old teammates on here.
Just about, not teammates, but you know, so I think there's like a year or two, we like overlapped in Cat 1. Because I think I raced the rest of that season in Cat 2.
Okay.
And then
I don't remember when I went to Cat 1, but
yeah, I can't. I'd have to like look at results or something.
Yeah, and I started riding in 2012.
Okay. So I think 2013 was my first year racing. So I did like one Cat 3 race, went to Cat 2, finished out, I think, that year Cat 2. And then I think I went Cat 1 right after that. Yeah. And then race.
I probably did some race.
I think we did an overlap, but then I went to Cat 1, and then I was like, oh, okay, I'm not just like showing up and getting first or second at these. Now I'm like getting my teeth kicked in. Like, these are kind of some real racers, you know, like Spencer and some of the other guys. Some of the guys like race Lifetime now or like World Tour. There's like fast guys in SoCal at that time. So
yeah, it was gnarly. Even the Brian Gordons and
exactly.
Brian Scarboroughs, which were like dudes that were, they were fast. I mean, they still are great riders, but we had a solid group of fast guys, like fast Cat 1 racers that probably shouldn't have been Cat 1, but it was just,
but you guys always
six
had
of
to...
us that battled each other always. Even Jason Denny
was Jason
super
was
fast.
And his whole crew, he always had like a little crew of guys that were always fast.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a bunch of fast people, and I did that for a couple years. I think I raced a little bit of like U23 stuff, but I was kind of getting burnt out at that time. And then I was like Mason Miller, and John Miller, who raced as well. They helped me out a lot, and I was like, became good friends with Mason, and he grew up with Jeff, the owner of Worldwide.
Oh,
so
really?
That's how the connection was made. And I was like at this crossroads of like, all right, I could like, you know, try to do this pro mountain bike thing, but like, I know there's absolutely zero money in it right now with where my speed's at, you know, like if I put in a couple years, maybe, but like, I still don't even think I was had enough talent to really make money there. And Jeff from Worldwide was like, hey man, I'm looking for a mechanic. I was always wrenching. I wrenched a bike shop since I was 16. So, you know, pretty nerded out on that stuff. And I worked for Trevor while I was racing for him in Metal Mountain. So I forgot to mention that. So I was like gluing tubulars for their masters teams, like every Friday, wrapping bars and, you know, doing stuff like that. So I had like this high end kind of bike mechanic background. And yeah, Jeff called me. He was like, hey, I want you to work for me. You know, this is my shop. I was like, I've honestly never heard of your shop before. And he's like, dude, I'll pay you $50 to come ride bikes with me. And I was like, sweet, that sounds great. I'll come out to Newbury Park and ride bikes. And then saw the shop, and he kind of like laid out this plan. And I kind of just like blindly trusted him at the time. I was like 22 years old, maybe.
Was this the first like real job, like real job in a sense?
Yeah, I'd worked at a Ford dealership for like 13 months as a lube tech. because Evian told me I needed a real job, and like I hated that, man. That was like, I didn't really hate the work. I kind of like working on cars and like that kind of, you know, my mind works that way, but like the atmosphere and just like, you know, clocking in, clocking out, people that are just like giving up on life that you're working next to. And I'm like 21 years old. And
this is a
like,
Ford freaking training video we're putting out here right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. This isn't for me kind of thing. So yeah. And then basically just worked at Worldwide starting then. That was like August of 2016. I think I raced nationals that year, like July. And then I basically started working at Worldwide the next month. And like, I don't think I ever held a USA license ever again after that.
Wow. So, 8 years. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that, has anyone else been there just as long as you at this moment, or?
There's two shareholders that came on before me. And then, yeah, as of that, I think I'm the longest standing employee. Zach Weaver's pretty close. Then. You guys know Zach.
Yeah.
So he came on 6 months after me or so. Best bike salesman in the world, self-proclaimed.
I believe it. I believe every word that comes out of that guy's mouth.
But, stop it.
Yeah, it's been cool. And just seeing it grow. Like when I started as employee number 8, with one location, and at our largest, I think we had like 45 employees, and now we have 3 locations across the U.S. And yeah, we did.
Where's the third? You got Reno.
Reno.
And then Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Is there a reason why Pennsylvania? Or?
There's a distributor out there, and it's also just a good central location for East Coast. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helped us get product out as fast as Amazon at the time, right? Like before you could order a part and it'd be at your door at 6 a.m., which is insane. I don't know how they do that sometimes.
Sacrifice,
but, you know,
to go for sure.
Yeah, but it helped us out with shipping speeds. For the U.S., for the Eastern U.S. market.
Yeah, which is as a Southern California-based brand, it's hard to get market share up in the East Coast. They're picky with their brands. And
but
yeah,
you guys are also on Amazon a little bit, right? Like some of the parts can be bought through there?
Some, yeah. Some allow it, some don't. Amazon to us is kind of like we hope to make a sale there because it's easy, and then we hope to like convert them into a worldwide customer after.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you kind of have to be on there. You just can't not at this time. You know, it's the largest place to buy anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, also what helped out the East Coast was Jeff had a racing career of his own. He was pretty solid. Super D racer and some downhill stuff. And he became really good friends with the Mulally brothers. So they're on the East Coast.
Oh, really?
They're like big East Coast influence. And Logan worked for Worldwide for about 2 or 3 years and helped start the East Coast shop and kind of did a lot of that for a while before he went and worked for Nico's Bike Parks and now Framework. So,
I didn't know that. It's interesting.
Yeah, seriously. Okay.
And here you are, Liam running the marketing show.
You evolved from the mechanic to what now? Exactly.
Yeah. So, wrenched on bikes for a while and then kind of like just continually said yes to more media and marketing stuff. I've been taking photos forever. Shot for some like skate and moto stuff early in my days. Like, you know, I didn't really make any money, just like sent out free photos or whatever. So that helped a lot. And then, yeah, now I guess my title is like marketing coordination and brand relations with Worldwide. So new products come out, kind of determine, oh, this one's gonna be really awesome and it's a sick product. Let's like make a bunch of content around it, blast it, pre-order, like get with the ordering team, like, hey, order as many of this spec that we can, or like maybe hold back on that spec. So kind of like the glue between the marketing and the sales. And then I take photos and do a lot of the copywriting as well. But also passing that torch a bit to our buddy Trevor. So
yeah. Slowly. Who's the next Liam, right? He started as the mechanic and now doing some other stuff.
Oh, so Trevor moved up on some stuff.
I'm trying. Yeah.
No, oh, really?
The stairway is there for him to take, so.
Our stairway's there. Well, okay, then what is he doing then now? Because I always know the mechanic side, but now he's doing some more stuff?
He does some, like, article and copywriting and stuff. thing.
Trevor Mejia, a buddy of ours, grew up in Santa Clarita. I've ridden with him forever, done some trips with him. Works for Worldwide as well, just for the...
Well, he still works there.
For people. Well, he has worked there for a while, and just for a little backstory on who we're talking about now.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, everyone.
But, so kind of doing that, and then also doing, product brand manager stuff for Trail One. So that's kind of my two roles I split between, like, the Worldwide brand and the Trail One brand.
So there's not much on Kettle that you have?
I personally don't do anything on Kettle,
okay.
Sometimes I'm a model, but that's about it.
All right.
With the tats, dude.
That's important.
They cut me because of the tats, so.
No.
Yeah.
That's such a shame.
I know. I'm not. It's all right, Link.
We'll use you for some giant stuff. It's okay.
Yeah, if they're cool with them. If not, I'm not bummed.
Would it be weird if you built the bike and then we shot you on it later?
At least I know it'd be not sketchy.
Wow. Shout out.
Should be.
Yeah. All right. Well, dang. I didn't know that you guys were both old teammates and competitive
teammates.
We've just
ridden together for a while, for many years.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, the SoCal mountain bike scene at the time was like pretty solid, but it wasn't big, right? Like, you had the same people showing up, year in, year out. And, a handful of those people kind of all became buddies. That's how I met Spencer and did some of those, what were they called again? The Santa Clarita or the Stay
Over the Hump LA turned into Pedal Fest.
Pedal Fest. That's what it was.
Pedal Fest. Yeah. Hey, but so like the racing around here is not as great. I guess in your guys' time in the beginning, it was better than what
it was
now.
It was like way better in the heyday. There were like Norba races at Castaic Lake, like big time XC races in Santa Clarita. And Southern California a lot more. And then, it went away. And then Over the Hump came about and brought with it a few other midweek race series. One of them was called Over the Hump Los Angeles that then branched out, went away from that, their like agreement and started a series called Pedal Fest.
Was it really called Pedal Fest or were you guys just that?
No, that's what it's called.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Greg and Gina Flanagan put that on. They were awesome, and they ran a great little show.
Not racing. It was fun.
Yep.
Do you guys feel a little bummed? I don't see any races around here, so I'm like, how do you get the local scene going? How do we generate the kids like you guys now? What do they do?
It's tough. It's the local governing bodies and land management systems that make it difficult to lease out land for races like this. I mean, if you look at Over the Hump down in Orange County, they're basically in a parking lot and you're never really, I mean, you ride single track for a little bit, but it's terrible and taking them years and years to get any single track at all. And everything up here, the Angeles National Forest and the Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy just make it nearly impossible to use anything that's decent at a decent price. I mean, we were doing races at Castaic Lake, and if you were paying for an entry, which was, $35-$40, maybe more, and then just to get into the freaking place, it was $11 to park, and that just makes it difficult, makes it hard, and especially in Los Angeles County, Northern Los Angeles County, that everyone's driving a ways to get here if you want a lot of people from Ventura or Newbury Park or wherever, Calabasas even, or Los Angeles, like downtown, got to drive a ways to get up here. So
what does Nika do around in this area then now?
Race at Castaic Lake, same spot where Pedal Fest was and the old Norba. And they could do a much better job trying to choose my words wisely here, but it's something. But Nika, I don't know how much longer it's going to last. But
and I think technically, this always like goes in and out because we're at Worldwide's. We donate to Nika as well as SoCal Mountain Bike League as much as we can.
Different now.
And SoCal Mountain Bike League is always going in and out if they're involved with NYCA or not. So there's a bunch of politics surrounding that. And it's all ran by volunteers,
Let's get into it. Tell us. Let me know.
I don't know. Hear it. Like, I just know it's all ran by volunteers, and whoever's running, you know, the SoCal NYCA League, maybe someone doesn't like them. Maybe they don't like the way they're doing things. So, like, they're like, hey, we're going to leave this chapter because we don't want to pay the NYCA fees. And then, so it's like all this politics that go back and forth. And we're always like 6 months behind on, like, oh no, we left, you know, NYCA League. And we're like, oh, we've been donating because of you, but like, you're not even a NYCA anymore. And vice versa, right? Oh no, we're back with NYCA now. And we're like, oh, we didn't know that, you know? So, I mean, it's getting kids on bikes. Like, I think Newbury Park High School team, local to us, have like 100 kids on their team.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But and they can only race up at Castaic then?
Well, there's a series around Southern California.
Yeah, I know, obviously, but they have to go down to Vail then, or
a lot of it's at Vail, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Even the my favorite place to race when I was riding was always Fontana, when I was racing XC, which had an awesome, awesome course and a sweet little chunk of land. The laps were shorter, but it was better for spectators and stuff like that. And that half of the land got chopped out of their
yeah, seen the bottom agreement. Part. They're like building houses.
Yep.
Is
yep, that what exactly. It is? So they just have the one mountain where the downhill track is and stuff, and that's pretty much it. And it's a bummer, but that's just kind of how it's going in Southern California for whatever reason, with whether it's motocross tracks or places to ride. Benelli Park had a pretty good NYCA race at one point, and
which that's the best where the Olympics are gonna be.
Oh,
yep.
So
yep.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how they're going to park everyone there for the Olympics. But
see, I think there's going to be plenty of space for parking.
Really?
They have the theme park, Raging Waters.
I guess you're just going to be shuttled across, is what you're saying.
It's not even that far.
Yeah.
Realistically.
Just like over that hill.
Yeah, the lake down, Puddingstone Lake is the lake right there. There's tons of parking on the other side and on the eastern side.
Are we going for the Olympics?
Absolutely. Why not?
Yeah, I'd love to go. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Just want to make sure. Sure. I wasn't the only one that bought a ticket already.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got burnt out on racing around that time. So I think that was kind of like equal time with kind of like some of the downfall of the SoCal League stuff and who was putting it on and who was kind of funding these races. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like a bummer because I feel like there's insanely good amount of riding where we live. And
for sure, but it's all the good stuff's illegal also. That's
that's
the crazy thing. No, seriously though.
I mean, know it is. It's so true. Yeah.
There's no trail systems like Galbraith and in Bellingham or anything close to that. And yeah, we have so much good opportunity for it.
So let's talk about that for a second then. Why is Southern California not, I almost, it's like it's not allowed to have good trail systems that are legal.
It's right back to what I was saying earlier. The land management and the governing bodies of our public land doesn't like bicycles, for one. And two, if we do put any infrastructure into building trails on National Forest or Santa Monica Mountain Conservancy, which is what the MRCA, I think is what it's called, Mountains Recreation of California, like that. I mean, it's they see trail building as a form of
it's got to be the same way that motocross is going through it lawsuits. Exactly. So that's why they're just like, no.
I don't even think it's lawsuits. I just think there's a lot of environmentalists in California that put up a lot of red tape for new trails or even trail maintenance. Yeah. I've talked to some rangers before, and they have to have like a biologist come out and survey a trail before they can trim it. And they can't trim oak that's over 2 inches in diameter, like an oak tree or oak branch. And certain plants have to be like either disposed of or they're not allowed to dispose of them. So they can trim the trail, but like they just have to leave it there. And therefore it's just tinder, right? Like that is the worst fire I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to kill plants and then leave it here to burn. So I think
the horseback are just running wild out there, you know?
I think there's a lot that could be done in SoCal to improve stuff, but it's all politics. Like we went to a lot of meetings for a while locally just trying to figure out how to get our foot in the door. And it's like, we can't even get our foot in the door as a mountain biker. There's just so much. It's literal politics. Like, they're voting on measures and board members and all this stuff. And it's like, I don't have time to invest 4 years in learning how the system works in order
to.
You
just need some nude photos of the senator, and let's just get this handled, you guys. Come on, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
myself and one other guy up here in Santa Clarita, Trevor Nelson, Tyler Nelson, sorry. We went to a meeting with the head of Open Space in Los Angeles County. And we learned a lot on loopholes that we could potentially jump through, and it's interesting. And we got the okay to build some stuff in some of their property, but we would have to propose a bunch of things in advance and show where we'd be building trails and how we would be building them, and it would basically have to be on existing. We would have to prove that they are existing trails, whether that be game trails or trails from the past and stuff like that. It's crazy, but who knows?
Try to get an okay to trim some trail, because the last two winters have been pretty heavy for SoCal, and then therefore a bunch of plant growth. And we're like, this is gonna get so crazy this summer. Yeah. We're going to have to be trimming all summer to keep these trails alive. And they're like, oh, yeah, but you have to have a ranger with you at all times if you want to trim. And there's like four rangers. And it's like, that's like,
one of those four rangers, you're a current ticket holder of illegal trail riding. So, you can at least talk to that
federal,
guy.
So that's even different. That's not even, like our local Conejo Valley Parks and Rec. Or COSCA is, I think, another group that they called, or the state park next to us. There's also federal land. So, like, that's the other thing is, like, Sycamore Canyon next to my house is a state park. My neighborhood is COSCA, which is Conejo Valley. And then on the east side of the Sycamore Fire Road is federal, and that's wildlife. And the west side is state park, and that is open, so you can ride mountain bikes. In the wildlife and the... you can't ride a bike over there at all. So it's like all this crazy stuff that's like, you know, a federal over there. So like, yeah, you get a federal agent there and they give you a ticket for federal trespassing.
What I'm hearing is we're just going to make an underground race series over here in the area. All the illegal trails.
The guys that, what do they call it? I'm blanking right now. LA Tourist.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, they do some cool underground racing that I'm into. I did one of their races last year. They're kind of like downhill-ish one.
But that one was super overground, wasn't it?
There's spots, yeah. I wore long sleeves, long pants, and still got Poison Oak like 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Poison Oak is fucking gnarly up in this area. I will say that.
It was cool, like... there's like a very obtainable entry fee, like gravel racing. I think a lot of it, though, back to what we were saying, where like kids are going to race and like what's taking over is gravel got this huge bump, right? And like people are doing gravel races, but I don't know. I like riding my bike 8 hours, but I usually like riding my bike 8 hours with a backpack and some friends, and like we have a day of it. I don't care to race 8 hours, personally, but I think that's taken a lot of the steam from. What the racing that Spencer and I used to do, right? A lot of the people that were doing that
more experiential racing.
Yeah. So, back to the LA Tourist stuff, their entry fee is super obtainable, like, you know, $50 or something like that, instead of like $150.
Actually score you, like you get a transponder, or is it just like Strava?
No, it's Strava based.
Neither. What is it then?
I guess it kind of is Strava based, right?
I think it's Strava based. And I think I had to like sign my Garmin up for the girl to track me. Like she could like live track me the whole time, make sure I didn't like take any outrageous like shortcuts.
But the LA, correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't done one, but LA Tourist Race has, you're given a number plate and then there are checkpoints of places where you have to go to. You can take any route or most routes that you can come up with to get to this checkpoint. And there's a book. at the top of or at the checkpoint and you tear the page out that is associated with your number plate. And that is your form of saying, hey, I was here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's like their main races that they do, which is cool. The one
but then
I
there's
did,
like an underground of underground. Is what
no, it's
do.
Just a different discipline. Like that's more like gravel XC adventure, which some of those days are big. I want to do some this coming up just like for fun, like me and Tideman or something, just go out and shred these courses. But the one I did was called the Great Descent, and it started way up at Chilao Campground, like almost to Acton. And it descended like to Mount Wilson, down the San Gabes right there, and then up and over from like, what's that, like Pasadena, dropped into Burbank.
Yeah.
It was something like
Brown Mountain.
Brown Mountain. Yeah. Something like 11,000 feet down and 5,000 feet up, something like that was the day.
Yeah.
That was a sick day though. And that was a set course. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah. That was like a set course, no deviation.
Was it almost enduro and you just had checkpoints timed in between or what?
I'd say it was almost like the longest Super D ever. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah,
because descending Mount Wilson alone, like from Mount Low Tunnel, or Mueller Tunnel to the bottom is like, takes like an hour and a half.
Yeah, so we actually didn't go down the face. We went down Red Box.
Sick. Well, that's cool too.
Yeah, and around that side. Which
is there not as many people on it? Because I feel like every time I'm on the, over there, it's like...
There's definitely a bit less people. I think there's less of a cliff because Wilson has some pretty gnarly cliffs. Running a race down that can be pretty questionable. But there's still definitely some exposure at times. And Chilao, descending Chilao speed is awesome. Like that's a proper trail. And you know, I was on a little bike and I was like, got pretty rowdy at times. So
is there any, Poodle Dog on Red Box still? There was for a while.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. There's so much poison oak, and I was just like covered my body head to toe with clothing. So,
I've never gotten Poodle Dog, but I've heard it's
Poodle
terrible.
Dog. What's Poodle Dog?
I've never got it either. I've had it like stick, like some of the leaves post fire will like stick to your socks, and like you basically have to throw the socks out. Like you'll never get the leaves off your socks. Like they like mesh in.
Poodle Dog is poison oak on steroids.
Yeah.
Grows after a fire and only above like 5,000 feet.
What?
Yeah, it's like a purple
is there a photo
flower.
Of this?
Poodle Dog brush.
Yeah, I don't know if it's less poisonous under 5,000 feet, but there was some at the top of like Gridley after the last fire.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe I'm wrong, but they were saying that was Poodle Dog.
Huh.
Okay, I typed in Poodle Dog brush and it's actually a brush to. Come a Poodle Dog, but
you're an idiot. No, it's like a purple flower and it's kind of tall.
It almost looks like sage.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what that is? Oh man, that makes so much sense when I get into that shit.
But I mean, it's not everywhere, but it's supposedly so bad.
Yeah, okay. And it's like I don't know. It's gnarlier than poison oak. Like, you have to be treated for it if you get it bad. It's not like
when it's under 5,000 feet, though, it's not as bad or not?
I don't know. I've seen it on Gridley, which I know the top of Gridley is only like maybe 45 or 5 at itself, and I've seen it on there. Yeah. So I don't know if like the you know, poisonous or whatever you want to call it part as different at different elevations, but. Yeah, I've gotten it on my socks before, and, like, it will never come out of your socks. You wash them 3 times, and, like, the leaf is still, like, meshed into your sock.
Oh my gosh, I've seen this shit before, too. Oh, dude, because, like, poison oak does it for me. Like, I could just imagine this. I might as well just fucking kill myself.
Yeah, I don't think it works like poison oak in the sense that every time you get it... it gets worse. Your immunity goes down. I don't think
that
is supposedly.
Is that really how it works?
Oh, man.
Yeah, supposedly your immunity every time you get poison oak is supposed to diminish.
I went in this weird spiral. Like, I never had it as a kid.
Same.
And then I got it at a certain age, and it was fucking bad. And then now I feel like I'm kind of on a better, or maybe I'm just more aware. Like, oh, I hit poison oak. I need to wash my shit or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I never got it at all. And then like a year ago, I started getting it.
I never got it. And then I was at a sea otter one year where it's everywhere.
Oh.
And it was just like one of those single track trains. And I kind of like came in, bumped the guy in front of me, just like tipped into this manzanilla tree. I don't even think I crashed. I think I like unclipped and like kept going. And it scraped like my whole neck right here with the tree and poison oak. By the end of the race, it was like swollen, gnarly.
Really? That quick? Yeah,
like an hour.
Oh, man. Because
it happened like the first section.
Wow. And you're sweating.
I was like, I've gone every year since, two or three times a year, like, you know, one or two times, gone on steroids for it because it won't go away type of thing.
Dude, I know. You got to get the good stuff. You got to get the cream. Yeah. I haven't got the shot, but I got to get the cream. Every time. So, I have my own cream tube. I just keep on
I don't know where my roommate got it. Sometimes she pulls some stuff out. I'm like, where'd you get this? But she,
Brisa.
Yeah. She had this huge prescription bottle of the topical cream this summer when I got it. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. Thanks. She had like this steroid cream, like huge, massive bottle of it. I was like, where'd you get this?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Drug dealer. Yeah. Your freaking roommate. Holy shit. Yeah, what? Hey, you guys both dig a lot of trails. I mean, I feel like you guys keep the system up around here. And thank you for that, first off. But definitely, I mean, you guys have encountered enough poison oak to, like, know enough of that, right? I mean.
Try not to.
And I feel like I've had the issue where it intertwines with other bushes and I don't notice it until I'm already deep in it. And I'm like, oh, fuck, this is poison oak. Same?
I mean, it's even worse in the winter where there's no leaves on it and it's you're just digging it and you got no idea. And then all of a sudden you get down and see some dead leaves and you're like, oh, shit, this is poison oak.
Just don't ever dig without long sleeves, long pants and gloves and stuff. And then, like, usually I'll go in my van, turn everything inside out, throw it in a trash bag, and then, you know,
light it on fire.
Change into other clothes. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Don't sit in your seat but don't do shit I do with it. It's like, I'm like, oh, perfect. It's in my camera bag. Let's just run this for a month.
That's what I do.
Does it stay potent like that for a while?
No, it lasts for like 3 weeks. It depends if it's in like a buried down burrow of your shit. And yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, out. Don't get me started. Fucking poison oak.
Supposedly tattoos help protect against a little bit because it damages your skin pores. Yeah, it damages your skin pores and doesn't allow your skin to absorb it.
That helps. I mean, that helps for you. You can basically only get it on
the backs
of your hands.
Yeah. The problem is I don't know if it's like poison oak now or like a rash or a pimple or like, you know, ingrown hair. Yeah. It just feels like an itchy bump. And I don't know what it is now, so I don't like if it blisters.
An STD.
Yeah, we get it, Liam. We get it, dude. Worldwide, just out of control over there.
Yep.
All right, back to bikes.
Back to bikes. You know, sorry about that. We got off deep on that one, dude. What's up with the FBI surveillance agent guy that we both know that just rips on a bike and is, I swear, just. Like,
he's my old road coach.
He was a road coach? Really?
Who's this? Coach me, Mike Easter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you know him too, Spencer?
I mean, ridden with him for sure.
Really?
Yes.
Dude.
I mean, that like him and, Neil Shirley, his old coach. And
yeah.
They're kind of that whole older era.
I don't know
taught us how to race and ride bikes. Like,
I highly recommend, Spencer, you go and just have lunch with the guy and you just talk FBI stuff. Because I'm
he's no longer my role. No longer FBI, I believe.
What?
He's sharing all his secrets.
Oh, so now he's probably just Homeland Security, government.
No, now he's going to turn back into professional master's racer. He's
all right.
Oh, fuck.
He's going to pull like 25-hour weeks now on the bike, I'm sure.
What? Is he retired?
Yeah.
How old is he?
50.
Dude, he looked like he was like 25.
I know.
What is he taking?
He has 20 years. I don't know. But, I just rode with him the other week, and he was like, I'm going to start riding so much. I'm like, what were you doing in the last, like, 10 years? Like,
I know, seriously, like, imagine The Rock, and he was just good at cycling. That is what it is. Like, he is freaking ripped.
Yeah.
How is he on a mountain bike, though?
He's okay. I raced Breck Epic with him.
I know.
He was my race partner. he's better than most. Like, you know, he's actually
just so strong. He ripped the handlebars off through the race, and
he'd give you a run for your money, Austin.
Oh, that's fucked up. That's fucked up, you guys. That hurts.
Whoops. The funniest thing is, like, I've done some gravel stuff with him, and he rips so hard on a drop bar off-road bike that he basically drops me sometimes. And I'm like, where'd this come from, dude? Like, you literally were so scared on the flat bar, like, yesterday. And now you're on a drop bar, and you're pinning it.
I know a few people like that.
Yeah, like, the one of the descents in Rock Cobbler last year is like, this goalie, and is rough. And he legit pulled 45, 60 seconds on me. And, you know, that doesn't happen often. Like,
that's pretty gnarly.
It shouldn't.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, and he like, straight pulled time on me and had to kind of check up for and wait for me.
Damn.
And that's how I was at Breck Epic, right? It was like, yeah, on like a 10-minute descent, I'd pull like a minute or something. Yeah. If I'm not like, I'm not trying to win the descent. I'm just like going trail speed. But yeah, no, he's fun to ride with. But yeah,
that guy.
He's no longer doing that. So if you need him for photo shoots, he's probably available.
Okay. Yeah. I might have to hit him up. I really just want to go to lunch and get some more FBI insights of what's going on. You know?
I'm sure if you bought him lunch, he'd tell you a lot.
Oh, I mean, does he still have the van and everything?
No, I'm sure you gave that back.
Well,
he has his van.
Oh, he has his van. That's what
yeah,
I mean.
His personal van. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, he had an FBI van too.
Oh, he had an FBI van
or a vehicle.
Oh,
a
vehicle.
Government vehicle. I'm probably saying too much.
I think we are. We probably are. We'll probably get killed after this. So it's okay. What happened to Spencer? I think he died.
He's like, I don't want to be a part of this.
Oh wow, Spencer's this...
sorry.
Gone.
I'm having some light technical.
He's done in the dark. All right. What's the plans for you, Liam? I know you do a bunch of like these just like off races, like Breck Epic, and I don't even know if that's an off race because you kind of do, and shit, you obviously get the greatest adventure. Like, okay, so is that Worldwide that does the weird trips to like Whistler randomly or whatever it is? How do you fucking sign up for that? Why don't you ever hit me up to go for some of these? You always are like, dude, we're already going, we're sold out, and I'm like, come on, dude,
we can go. I can see if. We have a spot open on Tasmania in 2 months.
Mm.
So yeah, these are cool. These are like extra, extra insane perk.
But is it on Worldwide? Like, how does the normal and woman sign up for this?
So this is how it goes. So we work with, like in the US, it's a company called Chasing Epic.
Okay.
Steve runs the trips. He runs his own trips, like usually 8 a year in awesome locations, a lot in Colorado, some Utah, some Idaho, and then he runs a couple like BC trips. We, as Worldwide, help promote these trips for him, and we promote it to our audience, our YouTube, our Instagram, and our email list, and we sell this.
That's how you're getting on them. Okay.
So these are usually more like kind of private trips. I don't want to say private. I'd say they're mostly offered to our, you know, viewers of media. And then with that, we get usually like 2 spots to go on the trip. So,
like, how many parts do I have to fucking buy to get on this damn trip? You know, like,
well, we just offer them the sign up. So, like, they just sign up for it. They're not that expensive though. Like, you know, for someone who just wants to like, hey, I want to go ride my bike somewhere cool this year, it's like, you know, whatever it is, $2,500. And that covers like all your lodging, all your food, all your guides, and all your shuttles for like 5 days of riding. So if you try to do it on your own, you're going to be spending about the same amount.
Where do you guys stay? Like,
usually like, he gets like 3, like a block of condos, block of Airbnbs somewhere.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So, you know, you have like a condo or a townhouse with like 4 guys that all ride mountain bikes, sometimes girls too. It's cool. And there's some girl shows.
How do we set this up with me and Spencer? We need to go on one of these trips. We'll film it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we
do.
So we've done a couple international ones too that are really cool. Like an Italy one. We're doing Tasmania in April. So.
Okay.
Sick.
Yeah. Those are really insane.
Pencil me and Spencer maybe in on this. You know, he's training now for Sea Otter, but maybe we'll just switch the focus to this Chasing Epic ride.
He's
you know?
Training for jet skis and what did you say?
No, he's got 6 weeks
Muay Thai?
Off.
Training Muay Thai, yeah.
This dude's going to flip us over and pretzel us up.
Well, bullies aren't bulletproof, so, you know.
Such an idiot.
It's all right, you know? Keep training, Spencer.
I'm there, though.
This year I have a couple of those trips, and then I'm going to race Downeyville. That's in Norway.
But you always do Downeyville, right?
I love Downeyville, man. That's like...
Downeyville.
I mean, if I wish there's more racing like Downeyville to me. Like, that's like combines fitness, bike skill, and bike setup, like, in really awesome places. Like, that's what... If I go to a race, that's I wanted to have all those things. So that's why I've done the Breck Epic. I've done like Moab.
Like, could I do Downeyville? Like, is it not, like, I can do it and just not be serious? Like,
dude, right? There's everyone from the fastest in the U.S. to the decent recreation people like me and Spencer and whoever else. Well, Spencer's pro.
You guys aren't decent recreational.
I'm a decent recreational.
Fuck out of here. You guys race Catalanage. What is that?
These days, that's for my level.
You're not.
Dude, you guys are putting down 10,000 foot 100-mile rides every week. Get the fuck out of here.
That's recreation.
Recreation of my ass.
Get out of here. But, dude, I have a buddy that's gone last 2 years. We call him formerly Big Mike because we met him on one of these trips, on one of these worldwide trips. He came and he was super funny dude, but he was kind of a big dude. And he was like, oh, my goal next year when I see you guys on the next trip, I'm going to be 50 pounds lighter. And we're like, yeah, whatever, man. You know, like, sure. Everyone says that. And he showed up 50 pounds lighter.
Wow.
And we're like, dang, like, that's sick. And like, he's came on a bunch of trips, you know, and last 2 years he went to Downeyville. And he was legitimately the last guy to be let through the top aid station at Packer Saddle on the XC day. He was last place.
I'll take that.
The first climb is the only.
It's a bitch.
It's brutal. Okay, how much is it? And what
like
am I looking
3K
at?
3K off the start.
What elevation are you at?
You start at 4, top out at 7.
Okay.
And... I want to say it's like 9 miles, 3,000 feet of climbing.
How long do you have?
Well, I think the cutoff is like maybe 3 hours. If you reach pro category, you have to finish XC in under 3 hours. If you want to be scored,
is there a cat 4 or?
I think it's just goes after that. Just goes expert.
Is there just?
Yeah, I don't think there's cats at Downeyville.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not USA.
But there's
cycling.
Everyone out there. And like this year I flatted on the XC day on the climb somehow like a tildo. I don't know how I did that. But anyways, I was kind of like shooting myself in the foot. So then I was having fun. I took like, there's some like rum party drink hand ups. And I took a couple of those and I, you know, stopped at the Lay's and got the little Hawaiian Lay. And I was having fun. So you can have fun or like you can race for a win. It's just a good time.
I want to race for my win in my category, you know? That class you just said that you guys were in, that's the class I'm going to be in. So
Liam has seen me absolutely detonate myself on the practice day there.
You looked yourself and some bikes there for sure.
I had a rough year.
Yeah, I just remember that one day we were pre-riding the course, and I don't know if I've ever seen a bike get thrown so high in the air. You like clip pedal or something? Do you even know what happened?
No, it wasn't a pedal. It was just the way I hit this root with my... I jumped something and hit this root with my front tire or something. Like, I cased it, and my hands blew straight off the handlebars.
Jesus.
And I folded over the bars and...
Yeah, and then boom, and the bike 20 feet in the air.
So maybe I'm going to skip this race.
No, it was not even in a gnarly section.
Yeah.
It was probably the tamer.
It'll catch you up. Well, the problem is, if you were to go here on a weekend and do Downeyville, you'd bring a trail bike with probably some pretty decent tires.
Yep.
Okay.
However, at the Downeyville Classic race, you're trying to make, you know, a short travel bike, an Epic Evo, a Yeti ASR, or something, and you're trying to have it survive.
Yeah, but can't I run some big tires on it and I'd be pretty decent? Or
you,
is it?
Yeah, but you still have to climb 5,000 feet in day one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's this whole bike setup thing that I love puzzling about, but it's
August 7th through the 10th.
It's a mess, you know. But yeah, anyways, Spencer had that crash, and then I think on XC or downhill day, you blew up your wheel like in pieces.
Yeah, XC day, I didn't race the downhill day because I ran most of the XC, like the downhill part of the XC, because my wheel was literally in four pieces.
And the downhill's an hour long.
Yeah, it was.
And then
fun.
Was that the year I dislocated my shoulder?
I think so.
Dude, we were a mess. We came together and we were like, yeah. I think 2 out of 5 of us finished the weekend. Like, we were a mess. But
you guys go up and pre-ride it though, right? Or do some shit?
Yeah, you go up like on Tuesday or Wednesday and ride a couple days, and then the race is like Saturday, Sunday.
Okay. You guys don't go up like a few weekends before or something?
I'd love to, but I haven't, no.
Okay.
It's a great place just to go
Spencer
hang out.
Spencer over there, like, cat got his tongue or something. Like,
no, I have, never. Okay. I've shown up like the night before most times. And
that's your MO for before. Sure.
Yeah. Now I just love it. It's like my week of like, there's no cell service. So it's like, hey, I'm off grid. I'm off work. Like, I'm going to go camp with the boys. Whoever wants to come, I got a campsite. And
then what are you usually done by? Like, because it's 2 days, you're there for like 4 days.
Sunday night.
No, I'm saying like afterwards, everyone just drinks beer and hangs out what?
Yeah, the vibes are insane. I think this is part of the reason why Liam likes it so much. Like, you're laying in the creek, you're in this small town of 200 people or what, if that, like no cell phone service.
BLM land for camping or what is it? How's it?
There can be. I get a legit spot, but you can go camp up in the mountain on, you know,
you
just
get a legit spot.
Forest. Yeah.
Okay.
My first night there, or my first time there, I did that. Just drove up the hill and
I got the big old tool in the bag. You know,
dude, and now you're like, you sold out and you got a Mercedes, so you're fucking big balling now. Like, who are you?
Yeah. Dude, I crashed the old one, man. That was a bummer.
What?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
The old Ford van took a digger?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No way.
Just on the 101 here in town, and traffic went from like 40 to 0, and the big girl did not stop, dude. I locked it up.
Do not stop.
Yeah, I locked it up, like, you know, looked left, like mountain bike crash. I was like, oh, can I go there? Nope. Can I go there? Nope. Oh, man, this is happening. Like, yeah.
Just, no.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad, honestly. Like, the airbags went off, so they totaled it. But that was my first accident I've ever been in my whole life. Like, never slid out, never like rear-ended anything else. Like, so.
And now old sweetheart's just giving off parts to other people trying to figure their shit out in the graveyard,
so,
huh?
Had to make the choice of, you know, sell out, get a boring Mercedes, like it's amazing gas mileage, or, you know,
so you gotta work on it. Let me tell you about
MPG
it.
Like my old van did, so.
Yeah. I mean, the new ones kind of get that, so don't be fucking thinking about the new one, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, my diesel's crushing. You gotta get diesel.
Yeah, my old one crushes it, but my new one just gets fucking raped.
Diesel?
Yeah. I mean, I'm like 15, 17, depends. If you're driving with Spencer, he's like a lead foot, so then it's like, get fucked. Everywhere he drives, his F-150 penned. Drive-thru's penned. To the trailhead, penned. Everywhere, penned.
Good. Yeah. Dude, you're doing great, Austin.
That's right. Yeah. All right.
All right. Yeah, I think we done. That's what I got.
I know. It's good, Liam. Thank you. We got some great insight on how I should not race Downeyville and just go to party. I might just come to hang out and party and then try to do a lap. Does Weaver do it?
Every year.
He has.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Maybe it might be.
He's my co-pilot.
Kind of against, he's your co-pilot.
Yeah. He rolls up with me every year and we've gone every
Spencer,
year.
Spencer, maybe we talk about this.
I'm down. Cool. I was going to this year and then I just wasn't in it enough, so I decided.
I get it.
Not
you
to.
Were training in the pool. I think.
I think I had a spot for Spencer in the campsite.
Oh wow!
A couple weeks before, I was like, had him on the list.
Yep.
So
okay.
And I just was like, hey, I'm not gonna go because I'm not fit enough. Essentially,
damn. I mean, it is hard. Like, you know, you have these times and these goals, and you want to make them, but like, eventually that'll start going backwards. You know, but it's a hard thing to swallow, and it's like, oh. You know, I used to be able to do this time, and now I don't know if I can do that, but.
It's not fun going and getting smoked in a place that you've gotten top 10 at.
yeah.
I've never
that
top
makes
10,
sense.
But.
I have. That's what top. I'm saying. I have.
Dang. Yeah. Fucking shameless
eight,
plug
eighth,
right there.
Eighth one year is what I, my best. I've
That's sick.
There.
That's legit. I mean, they call it the All Mountain World Championship, so.
Yeah.
Well, you got 6 weeks of training coming up here. Let's fucking get it together.
Dude, Spencer's already fit. I just rode with him the other weekend. He's ripping.
Well, now he's got 6 weeks off from the fucking
not eighth
bathtub,
place
so.
Fit though. Not eighth place Downeyville fit.
Yeah, pretty hard. I mean, I think this year again, I'd have to look. Someone told me it lines up with a Lifetime Grand Prix race, so that takes out like five people that can beat us.
Oh, so top 10's in your future, Spencer.
Yeah, but Keegan said that last year, and then he still showed up and.
Well, because that race got canceled.
Oh.
The race got canceled, and Santa Cruz is like one of the biggest supporters of the event. So
what's it against? Which round of the Lifetime?
No, I don't know.
Because remember, we had Tobin and Keegan on the week before Downeyville, and they were like, I don't know. And then next thing,
Tobin was going. He always goes.
Yeah, he was going for sure.
He does pretty good. He's like top five guy for sure. Maybe on podium.
Okay. All right.
But Keegan got in on because he's Keegan. You know, if he wants to go to race, they'll probably open up a spot for him. Even though it's sold out, but...
They'll find a spot, yeah. Rightfully so.
He's kind of earned that, right?
Yeah, he went, and he won both days. So I think you're allowed to go. You're fast enough.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
That's good to know. Because we're hunting for like some type of fun race thing the insider can do as a team. Right, Spencer? Yeah.
Yeah.
Orestes was talking about, what else was he talking about? The BC bike race?
Yep.
And we were talking about that. Have you done that?
No, I'd love to, but that's such a big commitment for me to like, I looked into it this year, but it's a 6 days of racing, 7 days of racing. And then
Orestes stole it like it was a great fucking thing to do. I
think it is.
It looks insane. Like it's basically my only race haven't done that's like top of my list. And I'd love to do it while I'm still, you know, in decent fitness.
Because you got to be pretty decent for that, right?
Yeah. You don't have to.
You don't have to, but if you want to, you know, race the open pro class and not get dead last, like, you know, that's my goal, is just not get dead last. But,
wow. Thanks.
an open pro, Austin.
But it's like a 2 week commitment. That's what I'm getting to. It's a 2 week commitment, hard to work around work, you know. Do I drive the van up? That's like another 2 days of driving each way. Like, it's just a big commitment.
Well, the way Estes sold it, it was like Airbnb, you fly in, you get shuttled, then you do
You know who we're talking about?
Hey, I'm just saying, you know?
Sean does everything right.
I fucking love that, man. Fucking love that. That is the only way I race, okay?
Well, maybe I could get, you know, Fox's dime to get me going the right way. I really
You got Sean's phone number, so...
We'll I wrote it to him last week. He told me to go.
I seen that. Yeah. But sell out, you know? Jeez.
Yeah. It's work.
It is work. It's a little bit more of a commitment. I need like a little bit of just a fun race, you know?
Yeah, we'll do it on Insider MTV's dime.
When is Keysville?
Yeah, because we're just crushing
it. Yeah, Keysville Classic's another good one.
Keysville, okay.
That one's close, and that's like a 2 day thing, I think.
Okay, well, pitch me on some races. I need a hit list of some stuff that me and Spencer. Okay,
dude, I can get in shape. We can get fit for Downeyville in August, and then rip right into that in October.
Carry it into Keysville.
Yeah,
I love it.
Just hit that late season fitness. Just not get going for July.
Sounds good.
You guys, all right. Let's scale it back a little bit here, because I'm a human. So, all right, well, I appreciate it. Give me your list of what you think of a race that I can survive and you guys can thrive, and let's sign it up. I'm in. But preferably where we fly and there's an Airbnb. I'm not really quite driving too far.
You drive everywhere, dude. Let's take your rig. Your rig is the Airbnb. What do you mean?
But you ain't getting that probably up in Downeyville, right?
No, you can get close.
Wow, you guys are giving me different answers.
Wait, why
here.
Can't we get that in Downeyville?
Is 40 foot a rig?
Oh, the 40 50. Footer.
Yeah.
Oh, the big rig.
The big dog.
Yeah, the big dog.
I didn't
dog.
Even think about that. I mean, we could get it there.
Oh, that didn't sound great.
We can
great.
Get close. We could probably park that in like a Tahoe RV resort.
Logging trucks drive in and out of there all day.
That's true. That's true.
Might want to see the road. I'm not getting, you guys aren't really giving me confidence for it.
You're good.
All right, well. All right, but yeah, something, yeah, maybe we go with that rig to some shit, okay?
I'm in for that.
Okay. Yeah, that Spencer's sounds, all hype.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, we'll take luxury. That rig.
That's what I said, that is the Airbnb. What do
luxury,
you mean?
Luxury, yeah. I thought you were just talking about his nice Sprinter.
I mean, we could go with the Sprinter. I mean, that's the second plan. But... Yeah.
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 That's probably nicer than some of the Airbnbs I've stayed in.
That is very true.
Hey, come on, you guys. All right. So give me the race. Let's figure it out. Let's plan. I kind of feel like we need like a cool adventure like that. Right, Spencer? Yeah.
Down.
Down.
I'm very down.
Hey, and make for sure you schedule your some time this year at Sea Otter to be on the fucking podcast.
God, okay? I missed Sea Otter at all.
You're not going?
Mm-mm.
You're out.
I'm in Tasmania.
Okay, well, I guess I'm not going to Tasmania.
First time I've missed Sea Otter since like 2013 or something like that.
And guess what? You're not going to miss anything.
Oh, stop it.
You're going to be stoked you're in Tasmania.
I'm going to miss the IMDb live recording of the podcast.
You can listen to it later. He gets it.
Hey, buzz me in from Tassie.
Yeah. Well, hey, the good news is no one can steal your bikes from Sea Otter this year with that, you know?
Thanks, man.
Damn.
And damn. All right. Sorry. All right. Too soon? Okay.
It's all good.
Oh, just rude.
Oh, wow. Story of my life.
That's being friends with Austin, you know?
That is like being friends with Austin. Yeah, at least say how it is. Okay.
Jobs, you know?
All right, episode 18. Now, we're winding it down. Okay? We good? All right, cool. Yeah, find us on YouTube. Hit us on Instagram at InsiderMTB. We have Spotify and on iTunes Podcast or however it's Apple Podcast. I'm not 100% sure. What do you guys call it on yours? Apple Podcast?
I say all platforms. But you guys sound like you're selective, so.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, we are on those other ones, but I mean, Spencer's a Spotify guy. I'm an Apple Podcast guy, and apparently you're all platforms. So, yeah. Cool, you guys. Thank you for listening. We do have a special episode hopefully coming up next week that will be live down with the Maxima boys.
From San Diego.
From San Diego. Spencer sounds like he wants to go. I'm not 100% sure. You in?
Make for sure that's my favorite thing that Austin says.
I'm fucking ending in this shit.
That's like a Rickyism, dude, from Trailer Park.
Rickyism? Wow. Make for sure. Make for sure that you follow us and you like Spencer because he needs to stay above 50K on his Instagram following. So thank you all. Catch us next time. Later.
See you guys.